Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Monday, December the 11th, 2017, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And Wendy, I hope you had a great weekend. I know I did.
I did too. Yay! And
hooray.
You know, that was because Friday we talked about Happy Weekend Eve, so I think that set us up for a great weekend.
I think it did, actually, yeah. In fact, we made a new friend, Louise and I did, on Sunday. We met a law of attraction coach and therapist, which was
really
fun. Yeah, we met another new law of attraction friend. That was really good.
Wow. Where'd you meet him?
I had kind of tracked her and some others down about a week ago, maybe 10 days ago. Louise mentioned at one point that she knew we were getting more into LOA lately and we wanted to really make that a key point in our life. And it would be great to have some local friends to do things with who are also into the same thing. So I said, okay, let me see what I can do. I'll do some searching. And so I did some searching, kind of like what I was doing when I was looking for you guys as co-hosts. And did it, you know, locally here in Connecticut, where we are, and found six different people within about a 10, 15, 20-mile radius who were LOA coaches. So I was pretty impressed that there were that many in the area.
That is really awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I contacted them. So far, we have met one, made an appointment to meet with a second one, a third one I'm about to make an appointment with, a fourth one we're still kind of kicking things around, didn't hear from the other two. So I figure that's a pretty good percentage. That's 50%.
Actually, that's an awesome percentage.
Yeah.
I wasn't as wise as going to, you know, like doing a Google search to look for somebody.
Yeah.
I did it kind of the old-fashioned way. I just waited to bump into somebody. But actually, I guess I use Law of Attraction to do it for me because I put out the SOS. I'm really looking for some like-minded friends.
There you go.
And things opened up to me shortly thereafter. So awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a good day. December is just working out really, really nicely. Plus, we hit a milestone on Saturday that I told you about. We have had over 9,000 downloads, 9,000 plays of our podcast since November of last year. So that was another one.
That is really awesome. And I'm going to give away just a little bit of a hint of a surprise.
Okay.
But at a certain point coming up in the future, we're going to do a big launch to get as many people who are as interested as we are in feeling good and wanting to have their daily dose of happy to help us launch a radio show in a much bigger way so that more people can expand into joy and happiness like we are.
So there you have it. This is the pre-launch to the launch.
There you go. Just putting that bug out there, you know.
That's right.
one thing I've noticed, Walt, since we've been doing this, every time we talk about something on the show, it gathers speed and or manifests almost immediately. So I'm all about, hey, if we want to do something, let's put it out on the airwaves, multiply it and make it bigger and bigger. So that's why, you know, even if it is the pre-launch, by the time it gathers enough speed and we're ready to go, it should be a huge launch.
Yeah, that's true. That's not just because of the law of attraction. That's the way launches work, too. Launches are great when you build them up like that. But, yeah, considering how things have been going lately, I agree completely. This is the time to just start doing our pre-launch countdown.
We just got to get our ducks in a row amongst ourselves, the co-hosts, and then once we know what we're doing, we'll start putting the messaging out.
Well, actually,
we're not ready yet. I mean, don't anybody just start telling people nilly-willy that, like, they want to feel good. Ha ha. Of course we want them to do that. But we'll do a big launch, like, in a more formal way at some point in the very near future.
Yes, right, in a very near future. And the fact that we're saying this to you right now, it's a secret. Don't tell anyone the secret.
Good thing I don't believe in secrets. Share those secrets left, right, and all over.
The only secret I believe in is the movie. Other than that, forget it. Anyway, welcome to your daily dose of happy. And
well, I have something fun to talk about that happened over my weekend.
Sure, yeah.
So I told you before the show, I was going to go refrigerator hunting because mine is looking like it's coming to the end of its life.
Aww.
And so before that happened, my girlfriend, who's staying with me right now, she and I went out and got something to eat, and we both have our cars on my driveway.
Okay.
And you know, so it's kind of like her car's parked a little bit behind mine, but mm-hmm. over to the side so I can pull out separately.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's a natural thing that when, because she drove to the restaurant, that we walk past my car and we see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the reason I say that, it'll make sense in a few moments as to why you need to know. I always look at my car as I'm walking past it. So we go to the restaurant. We come home. She pulls up in her normal space in the driveway. We walk by my car. Don't think anything of it. We both come in the house. I change shoes or whatever. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go head up to get the refrigerator. And I walk out of my backyard, which is how I exit toward my driveway.
Okay.
And I look at my car, and I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, the side windows are so clean. Like, how did that happen? I haven't washed my car in a while.
Hmm.
And I looked. My windows weren't clean. My windows were rolled down.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, I don't remember this. So I walked around to the other side of my car, and the windows on the other side of my car, all four windows were down, and my moonroof was open.
Okay.
So I had this momentary, oh, my gosh, what's going on? And I, you know, I looked, and like there was no broken glass.
Good.
And I opened up the car, and I looked. My glove box still had all of the things that go in there. It's like nothing was touched.
Okay.
And so almost like I needed a witness, I go in the house, and I call my girlfriend and come out, and I said, you just got to see this with me. And so we both stared, and she's like, what on earth? And I said, I know, that's what I'm saying, what on earth? And I went, when we came in the house just a few minutes ago, my windows were up, weren't they? And she goes, yeah. And I said, because I think if they were down, I would have noticed. Not to mention, I hadn't driven my car in a couple days, and I never leave my windows down. And so she and I just kept scratching our head going, what's going on? So we look at our neighbors, and all their windows are rolled up just like normal. And so I said, I believe there is a message from the universe here for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know what it is at this moment.
Roll up and your windows. Goes, no, sorry. I didn't mean to ruin the story.
No, what did you say? I didn't hear you.
I said the message from the universe was roll up the windows.
Oh, if it was only that easy.
Yeah, right.
So she and I both, this is the kind of almost weird normal thing in our lives. And so we both said, let's spend some time thinking on this. So she goes back in the house, and I get in my car, and I put up all my windows, and I put on Abraham and the CD player, and I pull out, and I head off to, you know, wherever I was going to look for a refrigerator.
Sure.
So while I was driving around, I was just asking questions. And this is my normal protocol for how I live my life and how I get. Are the windows open some kind of a message for me? And I felt yes. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, where can I go with this? And so I just kind of was rolling it around in my head, and I went, well, all windows open. It feels as though either something's being let out or something's coming in.
Okay.
And I kind of asked, and I was kind of getting a feeling like, yeah, I'm on the right track with that statement. And I went, okay, well, what's next? And I went, so is it coming in or going out? And I got, it's coming in. And I said, okay. So I couldn't go, like nothing else was coming after that. So I go in, I do my shopping, and I come back out and, again, pop in Abraham, because there's nothing like a way to up your vibration than listening to Abraham in the car. And so I'm listening to Abraham, and all of a sudden there were key phrases, and not that the phrases right now are coming to me, but there were key phrases that Abraham was saying that were just resonating with me. And I was kind of sensing this goes with all my windows being open. And
wow.
So then I all of a sudden felt like I was in a place to get this answer. And I said, okay. And I tuned in, and I don't know how to describe that except an internal focus for being open to receive.
Okay.
And that's what I got. I am now wide open to receive.
Oh, and I see. So the car windows was a metaphor.
Yeah.
Okay.
All my car windows were wide open. And I'm like, oh, and this was so exciting. I'm like, I am wide open to receive. I have goosebumps even as I'm saying it. All weekend long, I kept going, I'm wide open to receive. I'm wide open to receive. Because Abraham's been talking about being in the receiving mode,
mm-hmm.
where you receive the impulses, the information, the action items, inspiration to move forward on certain things that you've been dreaming of and desiring. And I just, and like right now I'm hearing on all four cylinders. I'm wide open, like on all four cylinders. I don't know if you what kind of a car person you are, but I understand car speed.
Yeah, I understand the purpose of cylinders, so I think we're okay there.
Do autocrossing. And it's like I understand what all the throttles are wide open. You give it fuel, and boom, it goes with nothing to hold it back. And that was the message I received this weekend for me personally, that I'm wide open, ready to receive.
Well, then you should be starting to get hit with all kinds of terrific stuff that you've been asking for the longest time. If you're wide open, it should start flowing in.
I am. And I'm very aware. Because, like, I have three topics or subjects in my life that I am looking for really big change.
Okay.
One is my career, one is relationship, a romantic relationship, and one is my body. I want things to change within my body.
Okay.
And I'm seeing little changes on all three of them.
That's good.
But this message to me this weekend left me with the impression that, like, the changes are going to move from little to big, and I'm going to see them quickly.
So, in other words, hang on tight.
Pretty much. I am ready. And just like you came into my life in a way out of the blue, in other words, completely not something I went and sought out physically.
Right.
It's like the email showed up in my inbox, and boom, you know, something new has just erupted in such a beautiful and wonderful synchronistic way. I won't give the details of it because I don't really know many, but I received another email today asking, this person was asking if I was a law of attraction expert because that's what he was seeking. And I'm like, okie dokie. So I set an appointment to talk with this person this Wednesday. Don't really even know what it's about. But you know what? I didn't know what it was about really when.
Yeah, it was just as much of a blinder to me, really. Yeah.
And I just had the sense, like, whether the email I received today is something that's, or whether it's kind of like a precursor to opportunities that are going to begin to flow into my life. Either way, it felt good and it felt right.
Very cool.
Anyway.
Yeah. That's intriguing stuff, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah. And, I mean, my girlfriend and I really nailed it down that my windows were closed when we walked in the house, and I probably left the house within 3 minutes after coming in, and now it was time to go out. So within that three-minute period of time, the powers of the universe chose to descend this incredible tactile message that I could not notice.
Yeah, you pretty much would. You'd have to be blind not to notice that one. That was like in your face.
This one totally got my attention.
Yeah.
All windows, including moonroof, wide open.
And do you use the moonroof very much?
Not much.
So there's another way that they were basically throwing it in your face because they knew you didn't use the moonroof at all. So.
Well, and I mean, when I think about it from just a physical perspective, with all the windows open, everything that could be open was wide open.
This is true.
You know, and so I don't know how much I would have been able to, like, receive it in a really solid way like I did, except after my father passed away about 5 years ago, I was standing in front of my air conditioner on the second floor of my house. I have this closet, and, you know, an air conditioner is a metal box in essence.
Right.
And I had just cleaned out an air letting me know, like, when the dates that I make the change.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I change the air filter, and I'm writing it down. And I had just had my AC service, like, a couple weeks before. And all of a sudden, I hear, like, this metal box knocking. And, of course, at that time, my first thought was, oh, no, what went wrong? I just had this service.
Mm-hmm.
But then I felt the presence of mind to just chill and tune in and pay attention. And let's see, I don't know if I can do that. I want to try to make a sound in a way that the microphone will pick it up.
Okay, well, good luck.
I was hearing something like, can you hear that?
Yep.
Okay. And it went on and on and on, but with much better rhythm than what I could do with my knuckles right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was like this beautiful drum solo. And all of a sudden I went, oh, that's my father. Because he was a drummer in real life.
Hmm.
But he hadn't drummed for probably the last 25, 30 years of his physical life. He wasn't physically capable. And I went, this is my dad letting me know that he is enjoying the thing that gave him so much pleasure. And he honored me with a drum solo using my air conditioner to do it.
Using whatever tools are available.
Yeah. I mean, not something that I think is common for most people's life experience.
No, I don't think so.
To recognize what it is. I think those things happen a lot. And because in that moment, when my dad did the drum solo, I knew exactly what it was. And I really connected with it, and I got such a resonance within my whole being that, yes, my father was letting me know he was happy and joyful, and he was having fun drumming again. So because I had that incredibly awesome experience, when I just had the experience this weekend with all my windows wide open, I didn't freak out. Instead, really the first place I went to after I went, okay, there's no broken glass, so there was no foul play, was, oh, this is a message from the universe. And I haven't received the who sent it to me about the windows, but I'm not sensing that that's important for me to know. It was the message that was important for me to know.
Well, especially if you've interpreted the message correctly, from that message, there's really no reason to need to know who that is, because clearly this is something that's synchronistic to what's going on in your overall life. It's not like you have to know who that messenger was. It could be a, you know, Western Union for all you care.
Exactly. I mean, because I was even thinking, okay, you know, the key fob has electronics on it, but there's nothing on there that does windows up and down. And even if a key fob could do that and somebody else drove by my alley and did it and it opened all my windows, I still know within every ounce of my being it's not how it happened. It's what's the message that it happened, and it got my attention.
Yeah, messages like that, they're a little bit weird, but they happen. But when they happen and you get that feeling, I know what feeling you're talking about, it's just sort of clicks, and you say, whoa, what is that?
Yeah.
I had that a number of years ago. It was actually shortly after my father passed. Speaking of fathers, by the way. And my dad was kind of a handyman. He would, he would take care of the yard. He would take care of all the stuff around the house and all that kind of stuff. Much more than me. I'm really not as handy as he was. He would, mowing the lawn was really important to him. Let's put it that way. He wanted to have a lawn that was always in good shape. Not that it always was, but that's what he wanted. It was important to him. So one day after he had passed, I was out mowing the lawn, and this is in a house where we had about an acre, so I had one of these riding mowers at the time. And mm-hmm. I'm riding the mower around to the back of the house and mowing the lawn, and get to a part where there's like a little flagstone-type path that leads up to the back door. And I'm about, 5 or 6 feet away from that. And, of course, this is a riding mower. They're really big. They're really loud, really noisy. There is a mourning dove sitting on one of those flagstones looking at me. And I stop. Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't want to hit the darn thing. You know, poor mourning dove, you get destroyed by that mower. Second thing, why is he staying there? I mean, this machine is making a racket and a half. It's terrifying. I mean, the cats heard it. They were off like a shot, you know? And here's this mourning dove just sitting there. So I stopped, turned off the motor, and the mourning dove was just sitting there looking at me. So I got off the mower and walked partway over to it. I didn't want to spook it or anything. It just sits there looking at me. I'm thinking, what on earth is this all about? And I just kind of stood there flummoxed for a bit. And so I finally said, well, I guess I'll just go back to mowing the lawn. I don't know what to do. And for some reason, as I sat down on the mower and started up, the bird was still sitting there. For some reason, I thought to myself, you know, the way I'm cutting the lawn right now, all my lines are really good.
Mm.
And I said, wait a minute. Are you telling me my dad came back as a mourning dove? Because that's what it seemed to me. This bird was, who should have been terrified out of his wits, was standing there inspecting me, inspecting my work. And as soon as I said that, he flew off.
And you know, I want to hear more about that, but I want to just interject this.
Yeah.
That Abraham oftentimes talks about how non-physical beings use birds or animals or other things to look through their eyes. Like they're the carrier of the message.
Right.
You know, and so it may not have been your physical father becoming the dove, but that your father's energy was flowing through the dove to connect with you.
Oh, and a mourning dove, that was appropriate. My dad liked mourning doves. He liked their call. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty
wild. That is very exciting when those things happen. And just to kind of add to this topic or this subject we're talking about, you know, I've heard other people ask me, well, Wendy, how did you know that it was your dad? Or how did you know what you are saying you know? And I usually say whatever thoughts pop in, like immediately while you're asking the questions and feel good to you, those are the ones that are, like in your situation, the fact that you talked about you're on the riding mower and you see this beautiful bird staring at you. You're now asking questions in your mind like, what's this about? Because this is an unusual occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And the thoughts that were coming to you were about mowing, doing straight lines.
Yep.
Your dad loves a nice lawn. Dad. So those were the thoughts that were there, and that's how you were able to put that together.
Eventually. Initially, I'm not sure I had any thoughts at all, to be honest. And when the idea that it was my dad came to me, I couldn't even begin to tell you how that came to me. I couldn't begin to describe that process at all. One moment I was sitting there, and the next moment I was thinking it was my dad. And I was thinking it with conviction, like, oh, that was my dad. And as I look back at it, I say, how the heck did I come to that conclusion? I haven't the faintest idea.
But, you know, you said something really important. You said, I was thinking it was my dad with conviction.
Yeah, oh, I definitely believed it.
So even if you don't know how you arrived upon it, the fact that it was there with such a sense of certainty is kind of how you know.
Yeah, these kinds of manifestations, when they happen, they never really happened very much to me earlier on in life, but in the last 10, 15 years, I've had a number of them. The first few, the first one almost scared me out of my bed.
Ooh. Let's hear it.
Well, I still don't know what the whole story was with that one, but we were asleep. It was probably, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And all of a sudden, in my sleep, you know, where you're in like that half sleep, half awake state, there was a face coming at me really, really close and got within like what felt like an inch or two of my nose and said, hello. And I sat up in bed and I said, what the F was that? And then I repeated it. What the F was that? And Louise says, what? Not to this day. I have no idea what that was. But, boy, did that feel real. Holy cow. I've never had a dream that felt that real. I can tell you that. I mean, I felt like there was an actual being right there. And when I saw that there was no actual being in the room, that actually scared me more than the face.
Well, so. Normally I would ask somebody, and of course I don't know that we can capture this now because it's been so long.
Oh,
but
it's been many years, yeah.
Before you woke up, were you doing the what the F was that while you were still in your kind of half sleepiness?
Oh, no. I was wide awake at that point.
Okay.
I mean, I was scared awake.
Okay. Because when it's still in the dream form, that's when I try to ask myself, if I'm lucid enough to be aware, I like to ask myself, what am I feeling right now? What does this feel like to me? Because our feelings will always take us to what it's about.
I was scared, just plain scared. That's it. I mean, that I remember very vividly. I was frightened. Like, I have no idea.
Like in your dream, you were frightened.
And after I woke up, I didn't know what the heck had just happened. All I knew is somehow some being had gotten into our house, into our bedroom while we were asleep and was looking at us up close while we were asleep. And then when I tried to get up to see what it was gone. That scared the bejesus out of me.
Hmm.
So I can tell you what it felt like. I do know that much.
Okay.
Beyond that, though, I really have no idea what that was all about. To this day, I have no explanation for it.
Hmm. Have you ever asked, you know, somebody, like, who's really intuitive or who
I asked my sister about it. She didn't really have any clear ideas. She's got some psychic ability. Louise asked me who I think it was, and I really didn't know. I mean, I named one of my uncles who had passed many years before, but I didn't have any real reason to say that. It's not like I felt this strong urge that it was him or anything like that. But I was grasping at the straws. I had no idea.
You know what would be really cool is if somebody is listening to our show right now and they want to tell us about one of these spooky, weird, unusual stories. You know, they could call us actually interact with us online, and all they'd have to do is dial 860-264-5432.
That's it. Yeah, we'd love to have a call if anybody's listening live right now who wants to chime in on this rather unusual topic. It's unusual because it's actually not the topic we laid out for the show.
And yet, here we go.
Here we are. It just goes to prove you can plan a show and it still doesn't come off the way you expect it to.
I know. It's real. I mean, like, I have all these other ideas racing through my head, really, on the topic that we're talking about, not the topic that we wanted to talk about. So,
well, what else do you have?
Well, a number of years ago, my younger sister had come over to my house, and she had come directly from work, and she told me that in the house, I may get some of this wrong, but, you know, she's not listening, so it's okay.
Don't be so sure.
She was smelling the smell of cigarette smoke.
Okay.
But she's a smoker, so it's really unusual for a smoker to smell smoke.
Yeah, I guess it would be, because their taste is muted. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And she was smelling it even in my house, and nobody in my house smokes. It's kind of a rule. If you want to come in, you don't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of smelling it a little bit, too. And I said, when did this start? And she said, well, it started when I got in my car at work. And she had somehow given some other explanations that she just felt like somebody was with her. She felt like somebody was watching her. But there wasn't anybody else in the car. And so when she got to the house and she's telling me this, I'm rather intuitive / psychic, whatever you want to call it. And I was sensing, and I'm going to tell you something that I don't even know if I have a belief system to support. That's how bizarre this is to me.
Okay.
So I said, I'm sensing that there's someone who's crossed over or someone who's left their physical body, but they haven't made a full transition to the other side, and they're just like hanging out. They don't know what to do. Like, they're confused.
So when you don't have anything else to do, you have a smoke.
Maybe. That's a good idea. And so I just said to her, I said, let me have a conversation with him. And she goes, you're going to what? I said, it's kind of what I do. I don't know. I just, in my mind's eye, I just picture this being, and I just have a conversation. And I did, and the conversation kind of led me to believe that he felt very discombobulated, just like didn't know, wasn't like, there was no meanness or no like harm that I felt from this entity. It was just confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think maybe what you're looking for is to know where to go. And I said, you're not in physical form. And there's a lot of love and joy waiting for you. And are you okay to let go and move toward love and joy? See, right now I'm saying this and I'm getting goosebumps. And I felt like this entity was kind of like, okay, kind of tentatively, not worried about it, but like sheepishly, like, all right. And I said, I will help you. And so I asked for guides and angels and anybody that was within our sphere that was aware of what was going on to literally take him by the hand and guide him to where he needed to go, where he would feel safe and love and peace. And it was kind of like in my mind's eye, I sort of saw this, kind of like something moving off into the distance, almost like, you know, if a helium balloon is let up into the air and you watch it until you can't see it over the horizon anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was that kind of a feeling.
Okay.
And visual for me. And then I just looked at my sister and I said, he's gone. And she goes, I don't smell the smoke anymore.
Mm.
And I said, neither do I. And she goes, what happened? So I told her kind of what my conversation was in my own mind, you know, with this entity. And she's like, whoa, I can't tell anybody this. Nobody will believe
it. Nobody will believe it, yeah, right.
But, you know, that was probably, gosh, I'm going to guess 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I still talk about that sometime. And it's really, it's a touchstone point because in her personal journey of evolution as a human in this incarnation, she didn't believe in any of that kind of thing once upon a time. She didn't believe anything psychic, didn't believe anything that was outside of what you can, you know, very much in a different place. And now when she talks about, remember when I didn't believe any of that at all? I so believe in all of that now.
Yeah, you hear enough of stuff like that, and you begin, if you were closed completely.
Pardon me?
If you hear something like that and you were closed to it before, you start to open up when you hear it multiple times, when you hear multiple different stories.
Exactly.
It doesn't really matter how much resistance you have. Eventually, you start saying, okay, I keep hearing this kind of thing over and over again. What on earth is going on here? And
honestly, it wouldn't even surprise me if that was set up as an incident in her life to help open her up to non-physical things.
My sister was the one who first started introducing me to stuff like this, and I can't remember exactly when she started doing it. She was involved in an organization called the Church of Two Worlds, starting, I'm going to say, 20 years ago, something like that. And I think it's about the time when she started telling me this stuff. And ever since then, my family's had a number of different things happen. I've had things happen. My wife, you know, lots of people that we've been in touch with have had similar kinds of events. So you have enough of them, and you start to say, well, there's got to be something going on here. either we have mass psychosis going on, or there really is some connection going on to the other side, one or the other.
Well, and I'm so grateful that my sister opened up to trusting that there are messages outside of our natural senses.
Mm.
Because when her husband passed last year, unexpectedly due to a stroke, he was 17 days in the hospital. And, of course, this was something that was devastating to her emotionally. But I think what kept her not from just completely falling apart was she knew she could communicate with him whether he was conscious or not. And he went in and out of consciousness while he was in the hospital. And, I mean, I was emotionally with her, whether physically present or not, where we talked constantly, and we talked more about non-physical things than we did physical things.
Hmm.
Because she couldn't, I mean, like from the time he went into the hospital, he never spoke with her again because he was not in a state to do so.
Right.
And yet she's very aware of conversations that they had together while he was in the hospital. And even in his, you know, ultimate passing, it was like she was comforted.
Mm.
And, I mean, I'm going to tell you something that I think is so unusual, but the day, you know, his physical body had come to an end, and we went back to her house, just her and I, afterwards, and she looked at me probably an hour or so after we got her home, and she said, you know what, I'm going to be okay. I personally was just amazed at her ability to even put that sentence together.
Hmm. How come?
Because I know what he meant to her, and they didn't have children, and they'd been married 25 years. They were each other's lives. And for her to say, I know I'm going to be okay, was a big deal.
Hmm.
And I believe she could say that because she hadn't lost him 17 days before. She had been interacting with him this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was encouraging her that just because he's not in the physical doesn't mean her relationship with him is over. And it did take us a little bit of time, as you know, she went through some of just the normal process of not having the person you adore in your physical presence anymore.
Sure.
Of course,
oh, yeah.
That was an adjustment.
Of course.
But I helped her get to the point, and other people helped her as well, where she has had multiple communication with him in some of the most unusual and fanciful and exciting ways that she knew it was him because nobody else knew certain things.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, she's, if you want to talk about a convert, she's a complete believer in life after death because she knows she's continuing to communicate with him on a very regular basis in very tangible ways.
Yeah, you have experiences like that, and it doesn't really matter what society at large believes. You believe, and I believe. I didn't necessarily believe before my father died. I believe now. My father passed in March 2008, and within a few days after he passed, my sister, who I mentioned is, you know, has some psychic ability, she and my mom, she went with my mom to church, and congregational type, United Church of Christ, so Protestant church. And they were in the service, and the minister was giving the sermon or something like that. In the middle of the service, my sister started to get a splitting headache, really bad migraine-type headache. And she has had enough classes with psychics and so forth to understand that when an event like that happens, you want to pay attention to see, you know, are you getting a connection of some kind? So she had the presence of mind, said, okay, that must be what's going on here, put it out in her mind. Is there somebody there? And immediately got a yes answer. And so her first thought was, Dad, is that you? And got another yes answer on that. And my sister, I have to give her credit, she has the ability to think fast in situations like this. So what was the question she asked next? What's it like on the other side? You can tell it was a burning question, right? And the answer that came back, this is what convinced me that it was real. The answer that came back was festive. Now, you have to understand my sister and my dad in order to understand why I found that to be convincing. My sister was a drama major, a theater major at the Southern Connecticut State University. And my dad, well, he did participate in local theater, but he was anything but a dramatic kind of person. He was a gregarious person, a very friendly person, also a very private person. But my point is, festive is not a word my sister would use. If my sister wanted to describe a happy situation, she would use superlatives. She would use, it was fantastic, it was stellar, it was unbelievable. Festive would be the last word that would come to her. However, festive would be very much what I call a dad word. That's a word my dad would have used. So when she said festive, I said, oh my God, it really was him. Holy cow. And there was no way, there's no way that she could just plan in advance saying, oh, I'm going to tell him the word festive because that's going to convince him. She didn't even know what the test was. She didn't know there was going to be a test. So there was no way she could have, you know, pre-planned that or anything like that. It was just one of those things. As soon as she said it, I knew it was true. Well, we had a wake the following Wednesday or something like that. We all got together and went to the church for the wake. It wasn't a funeral, it was just a wake. And what do you call it? Memorial service. Sorry. It was a memorial service. And we all congregated in, I forget what they call this room. It's a room that all Protestant churches have. And it's right next to where the sanctuary is. And we're meeting with the minister. And so we're all sitting there very quietly. And we're just kind of, you know, waiting for the service to begin. And it's my brother, my sister, myself, my wife, my niece, Michaela, and my mom. I think that was everybody who was there. And we're just sitting there quietly and just chatting and so forth. And it occurred to me, finally, after being there for about 10 minutes, we were there to be consoled by the minister. The funny thing was, none of us needed consolation.
Oh, so the purpose you were there was to be consoled, but you didn't need it.
None of us needed it. We were all convinced he was fine. Now, you have to also understand how he died. He had Parkinson's disease, which is a horrible disease, and you ultimately don't die from it. You die from complications associated with it. But in my dad's case, without telling too much of a really miserable story, he starved to death because he couldn't swallow any food. So, you know, he got past all that part, and so we felt, oh, good. Thank goodness he got past that. And then we get this message from him a few days later that everything's okay and that he's in this festive environment. It's like, okay, well, then there's no problem. That's great, you know? And the minister is looking around the room at us, like, giving us this look. And I'm saying, what's he looking at? It finally occurred to me, he didn't understand our reaction.
Oh.
He didn't understand what was going on there. And when he gave his, what do they call it? His talk about, you know, the deceased and so forth.
The eulogy?
Eulogy, yeah. When he gave his eulogy, he said he was amazed at how strong and very impressed by how strong the faith of our family was. Now, you have to know our family in order to understand just how silly and funny that is. Because the only churchgoers are my mom and dad. My sister occasionally goes. My brother and I never go. We are about as non-Christian, the rest of the family, as you can possibly be. And he's telling the congregation that we are the most faithful people he's ever met. And I'm sitting there practically, you know, laughing in the pew. Trying to make sense out of this crazy situation that's going on. Because I'm feeling happy. I was feeling happy, Wendy. I was sitting there at my dad's memorial service feeling happy.
I truly believe, Walt, that is an appropriate response. Because when you believe that there is no such thing as death, that we go from life to life to life to life, and especially when we've gotten a message from our loved one that has already transitioned, that to me is the appropriate response.
When my father passed,
I was the only one in my family that didn't shed one tear.
Really?
And I never did. Yeah. And, I mean, my coworkers were trying to console me, and it just felt weird because I'm like, I don't need to be consoled. I don't even want to talk about this subject because what do they want to do? They want to tell me about every death in their family and how they handled it. And I'm like, I don't want to hear about your dead loved ones.
I can identify with that, actually, because I did my grieving before my dad died.
Mm.
And Louise can confirm this. There were a number of times where I was just breaking down in the weeks and months leading to his passing because – I knew that I wasn't going to be able to have, you know, my physical conversations with him and you know, hug him share the he and my mom lived on a lake in Virginia, so, you know, share experiences on the lake and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I knew that part was gone. In fact, there's a particular image of him I keep in my mind, in my minimalist image way, because, you know, I'm not really good at visual imagery in my mind, but whenever we would go out on the boat and come back, there was this image of him standing on the dock waving to us as we're coming in to greet us with his hat on. And that image will stick with me forever. So that's what I was feeling a lot of. I was feeling very nostalgic about that leading up to his passing. Once he passed, I was fine. It was like all the stress disappeared at that point. So when you say you didn't shed a tear, that's what I think of. That's exactly how it felt to me.
You know, I have a photograph. I have tons of photographs on my refrigerator. And the one that's, like, closest to where I put my hand on the handle to open it up is a picture of my dad holding my nephew when he was very small.
Oh.
And, you know, kind of like cradling him.
Right.
Because my nephew was asleep in his lap. And, you know, I see that picture every day. And you know how you can look at the same thing and not notice it?
Mm-hmm.
Much of the time, I don't see it. But this year on my birthday, I just happened to be opening the fridge door in the morning just like I normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the eyes of my dad in that photograph twinkled at me.
Mm.
And it got my attention, and I just looked at it, and I'm like, Dad? Because I was asking, like, Dad, are you present?
Right.
And I got happy birthday. I was like, that is so incredibly cool. And I feel so pleased and happy for myself that I've developed these skills, because I believe we all have them. It's just a matter of you accept them and then will you, like, actually do the work in order to, like, practice it. I'm so pleased that I am where I am because I can honestly tell you I have such a good relationship with my dad now that far supersedes the relationship we had when he was on this physical plane.
Wow.
You know, I would say for the majority of my adult life, we really didn't hit it off very well, and there were more obstacles between us then there were things that would cause a bridge for us to really communicate in a way that was really receptive and responsive.
Mm-hmm.
And even though in his last years things were fine, it just he was in such a bad place physically, he didn't want to see anybody, you know, and I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
And so the joy part for me is now that he's not in his physical body, he's not hurting anymore.
Right.
It's like he and I are able to communicate in a way that is just completely free of resistance.
Yes.
It's completely free of the things that the two of us disagreed on.
Mm-hmm.
He loved to go down the political road and talk about what's wrong with every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the political scheme. And
something I know about, yes.
Yeah, and I just felt, I don't want to talk about that because we're just going to add to what's not working.
Right, exactly.
But to me, that was not a topic I wanted to ever discuss. And so, but that was like, you know, he had nothing to do because all he could do is hang out and watch TV or be at the computer. And his whole world was watching CNN.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like now we have so much more to talk about and our conversations are so much more joyful and they're just very pleasant. And, you know, he's not the only person I've had these communications with.
Well, the story you're telling reminds me of something with my wife. Because she similarly had a difficult relationship with her father, except for up to the last couple, 3 years of her life, something like that. And there's a lot I could tell you about that, but I'll narrow it down to just two parts of the story. Well, three parts. I'll tell three parts. Part one was the last 2 or 3 years. She had gotten herself in balance, too, because she'd been kind of out of balance for many years for a number of reasons that I won't go into. But also she'd been very dependent upon him financially, and she was reaching a point now where she no longer had to be financially dependent. So that kind of put them more on an equal footing. And the last few years of life, it was the best part of their relationship. They patched a lot of wounds and so forth. Now, my father-in-law was a Jewish male who did not practice Judaism. Let's put it that way. And he married a Baptist who did practice privately and quietly in such a way that my wife didn't even know that her mother had been taking communion once a month in her own home because one of the local ministers had come in to administer to it. She didn't find that out till after her mother passed. So it was, you know, interesting dynamic going on in this family. Anyway, Leonard, my father-in-law, passed about 3 months after we got married. He stayed around long enough for us to get married. In fact, we even got signals like, you gotta get married soon if you're gonna do this, because, you know, I'm not sure how long I can be around here. He lasted 3 months after that, passed. And then shortly after he passed, Leonard actually got married twice. The first time was to my wife's mother. My wife's mother died when Louise was like 21. And then later on, he remarried another woman named Ruth, who became Louise's stepmother. And after he married Ruth, their life was very non-spiritual in every way that you can possibly imagine. So when he passed, Louise was a little bit concerned, not after he passed, but leading up to his passing, because of his lack of belief in this matter. And she thought he was going to be confused and upset and so forth. And, of course, I reminded her what she and I believe, which is very much very similar to what you believe, that, you know, how the whole thing works. So that calmed her down. But my point is, after he passed, about, I'm not sure how long, a month, 2, 3 months after he passed, his stepson, in other words, Ruth's son, got a message from him. And in that message, Leonard said to Jonathan, "It's all true." And what Jonathan took that to mean, because Jonathan is actually a self-taught, he became a rabbi, and he also is self-taught in Christianity. So he has both religions going on there, and he's very firmly grounded on it. So from his perspective, it was Leonard saying to Jonathan, all the things that you've been telling me about afterlife are true, even though I didn't believe it before. That's quite a message to get.
That is quite a message to
get. Especially given the relationship, because it wasn't like Jonathan considered Leonard to be his father. He was a stepfather who he barely had association with. So Leonard chose Jonathan to get this message out to his own kids because he figured it would have more credibility because of John's, you know, religious training.
You know, I know we've spent a lot of this time talking about those that have transitioned, but I really hope that the greater message that has gotten across to those that choose to listen to this is that there is no such thing as death. That we go from life to life to life. And that, yes, there are things that happen in our physical or physicality, where we transition out of this physical body, but we go to a different level of life, and I believe we come back again into another physical body at another time. But it's all life, and we who are still in physical form, we get to choose how we want to relate to the subject of those that pass on. You know, is it going to be a time that we choose to mourn and grieve and feel as though life will never be the same? Or will we choose to know that we can continue to have those relationships with those that have passed over? And in some cases, like with me and my dad, have an even more improved relationship. And one of the other great things that I love to know is that because when those that are close to us transition into non-physical, they now have a vantage point where they can provide information for us and encouragement and inspiration in a way that they couldn't even when they were in physical form.
Yes.
Like my business partner from many years ago when I had a costume manufacturing company, he didn't pass away while we were in it. He passed away, you know, after we had let the company go. But he and I were very, very close. And what was fascinating is he came into a lot of his spiritual gifts after he had had a heart attack. Because in his words, something like a heart attack when you think you're about to face death, because he believed death was the end.
Right.
That you start to make different decisions. And he and I had a really rough relationship. It was kind of love-hate, where he was either really sweet to me or he could be just a total jerk.
Ooh.
And it was very uncomfortable to be with him sometimes because he could be so cruel and so mean. And I knew, in a sense, he didn't really mean it, but that was just how he had learned how to respond to certain things. But I had to take myself out of his life for a while because I didn't want to be in that environment.
Sure.
Well, he had the heart attack while we were in a time that we weren't communicating. And when I later learned about the heart attack, he actually reached out to me. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's a softer, kinder, gentler version of himself that I've never seen before. And so that's when we really reconnected in a beautiful way.
Right.
But that's when his spiritual gifts started to show up. And he actually became, this is so, I don't know anyone who's ever done this. He became very medium-like. Like he was reading the energy of people who'd passed over.
Wow.
But because he had this beautiful expertise in costuming, the way the information would come to him is he would recognize people in costumes or in historical garb. And so he might have a read, he might do a reading with somebody and he'd say, well, I'm seeing this cane. It was probably from the 1860s. And he would describe it in detail and they'd go, yeah, that's what my father had. It was passed down from his grandfather and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's how he connected to the other side was through historical tchotchkes.
Interesting.
It could be a hat, it could be an old photograph, but it was something that had a historical reference. And everybody who worked with him now that he was doing this psychic mediumship was amazed at his accuracy level. And I never knew anybody who was a medium like him. So anyway, you know, long story short, he had some physical things with his heart, and he eventually transitioned. And I didn't know he had transitioned, but I was in my car one day, and I was getting a sense that he was wanting to communicate with me. And I knew at the time he was in a hospice. And I just had the sense he was ready to go, but he was holding on. And I just called him by name. I said, Steve, and I just cried through this because I just felt him so deeply. And I said, if you're holding on because you think that any of us will be disappointed, let that go. Because your friends and family, it's over for you. And we know that what's waiting for you, at least I do, is so much better than what you've got going on right now. So in particular, if you're asking for my approval or permission, you've got it. You can go. Now, I knew that that was a very real conversation. And it was a couple days later that his loved one communicated with me text until a couple days even after that And when we reconstructed the time, almost within minutes that I had this conversation with him while I'm driving on the highway, that's when he crossed over.
Ah, okay. All right.
And so, I mean, it's kind of like there's nobody that can tell me that these things aren't real and that, you know, psychic ability doesn't exist. Because, again, I believe all of us possess the ability. But, you know, if you're afraid of it, you can't let it in. If you're open to it, it'll come in with flying colors. And it's like, you know what's funny? The topic today, Walt, was about expansion.
Right.
Which we never hit on and what just came to me. This is expansion at its greatest, because when you let in your psychic abilities, you expand your world beyond this three-dimensional thing that we call physical life, and we expand into something that is so much bigger, and it is more about our essence of who we truly are than what our three-dimensional life can possibly hold.
So, in essence, when I posed the topic of what is expansion and expressed in the description that I was looking for an answer, you're saying, I just got my answer.
Well, I don't know. Did you get an answer?
I'll have to think about that one for a bit. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But it's intriguing. I will definitely admit it is an intriguing possibility. I still think I want to talk about the topic more, but if this was an answer, then I'm going to pay attention to it.
Well, and what we said at the, you know, right before we went on is, let's just see where it goes. We know what thought or what topic we have in mind, and we'll see where it takes us.
And sometimes the topic is something you stick to, and sometimes you go off in a completely different direction.
But you know, what was coming to me is this is expansion in a way that we don't normally think about expansion.
This is true. Yeah, that's not the normal application. Not even LOA circles really focus on expansion this way. And so that makes it an intriguing answer.
You know, and this is expanding your thoughts, expanding what's possible, expanding the three-dimensional landscape to encompass so much more.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
the expanse of all of who we really are is available to us, but how much do we let in is really up to us.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating concept. The idea, and this is an Abraham concept, that we exist both in the physical and in the non-physical at the same time. The image that I've created in my own mind to kind of make sense of this, you know, the board, the sandwich type board that you see at like the seashore, and it's got a scene that's painted on and figures without faces, and then you can scan behind it, put your faces in there, and they take pictures and all that kind of stuff. That's what I think of, so that you have the face, which is the physical part, sticking out in the picture, and the rest of you, the non-physical, is sticking out the back. So it's like the metaphor for what it's like to be both physical and non-physical at the same time.
That's a pretty creative visualization.
Yeah, that's why I like that one so much. It seems to, it has a nice one-to-one correlation to it. Yeah. So, we have a little over a minute left before we part company after such an intriguing conversation. I don't think we've ever done anything like this one on LOA Today before.
Oh. But I'm wondering how we can expand our reach so that other people can listen and join these kinds of conversations.
Well, that's easy. All we have to do is ask people, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, subscribe to the podcast. Just go to loatoday.net. There's subscribe buttons all over the place. If you're on an iPhone, go to the iTunes store. Very easy. Or go to the podcast software that's built into the iPhone. Either one, just do a search on LOA Today when you get there. It'll pop right up. Or if you're on a Google Android phone, just do the same thing with Google Play. Again, just do a search on LOA Today, and we'll pop right up. But please do subscribe, because, yeah, you don't want to miss any of this stuff.
This is juicy. This was a very fun topic. Had no idea that it was going to go here, but this is really cool.
Well, thank you for doing it with me, Wendy, and I look forward to doing it again tomorrow, whatever the topic's going to be. Who knows? We could set one that's completely different.
I'll be here, I promise.
Well, I'll be here as well, and we hope you all join us as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.